Ben, any ideas?
Yeah, always, you know, but I mean, you know, like earlier, sort of Henrik, when you mentioned sort of whether it was a time now sort of when we needed to make our decisions and, you know, sort of whether we have to go with this or whether we're going to end up, you know, sort of chopping wood like Alan Watt and living in a shack.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, quite frankly, I am going to be living in a shack at some point because, as I say, I mean, I've told everybody really, I don't have a job, Henrik, really, as such anymore. I mean, now I'm a full-time researcher,
mm-hmm.
living exclusively on the charity of good souls like yourself and everybody listening. And so if I could just say, if there's anybody who wants me to talk at their conference, anybody that wants me to in some way speak out against this, speak out, not speak for it, mate, you know, speak out against this vile, abominable, this utterly satanic, this despicable sort of reptilian presence, then I'm more than willing to do it. And you know, here's something else as well. You know, I mean, I'm going to end up on the streets or in prison or in a shack simply because, you see, I'm not going to carry the card. I'm not going to take the mark of the beast upon myself.
Are you at this point at least, are anyone forcing this upon us now? I mean, if we talk about the now and the choices that we're standing in front of now, I mean, it is still possible to be a part of the society, if that is what we want to be, of course. It's still possible to be a part of it, but we don't have to go along with their game just because they have ideas about it. What do you think?
Sure. I mean, who knows? Maybe I'm a bit more sort of, you know, maybe I'm a bit of an extremist. I've no idea. But, I mean, as I say, I mean, I've never really got on with society generally. Yes, it is possible to, yes, of course, right now, yes, we're talking about, if you talk about, right, I mean, I'm looking into the future. I'm not looking, you know, tens and hundreds of years into the future. I'm looking in our lifetimes. In mm-hmm. our lifetimes, this thing is going to either play out or it's going to fail. And I'm going to be a part, if I can be, I'm going to be part of the movement which ensures that it fails. And well, I'll die for that.
Well, exactly. But that's a very good point, because what you're saying there is that you are the one who is creating the world that you want to live in, right? That you have the opportunity and ability to form the world that you want to be in because of the actions that you take, right?
I mean, you know, I hope so. I mean, I'm an individual, and I don't have too much. I don't have too much faith in sort of collective action.
Sure, but I mean, the world that, if we talk about the world that the future that they want to have, that you're up, you know, against, obviously. Then,
sure. I am against. Yeah.
But then that hasn't happened yet, and the opportunity now is that we can prevent that from happening, right?
Yes, we can. But, you know, I mean, I have to deal with my own sort of martyrdom complex. And I know that is, I mean, this is sort of part of my makeup, as it were. I mean, I tend to look at this agenda. I tend to look at the reptilian agenda as this massive, overbearing, rollerball that is going to destroy me, and it will destroy everybody else apart from people who in some ways, roll over for it, who bend over for it, who in some way compromise for it, i.e. who in some ways spiritually take upon themselves that mark of the beast and actually become Antichrist. And, I'm simply stating the fact that even though I feel, and yes, it is negative, it's deeply negative, but I feel it's going to destroy me, but I would rather be destroyed than in any way than compromise to it. I despise it. And moreover, I'm not so in love with this world. I'm not so in love with this planet. I'm not so in love with humanity. You know, I'm more than willing to. I'm more than willing to sort of, you know, move on.
Sure, Jake. Is this? Do you think that this is a time where we can, form more and more the world that we want to live in the future?
Well, yeah, I mean, everything is coming into focus, and, you know, we'll all have a good laugh about these serious, you know, subject matters when it all does. You know, it'll be like, just there's this understanding growing, and at the moment it's just so, it's like that moment of tension just before something snaps, you know, so there's so much energy in the system, so it feels like an unbearable. You know, it's like it's about to spark. And that's why everything is just so tense and people are so like, you know, full of fear and full of, you know, worry and full of all this stuff. It's just the image is about to take shape, but we're right on that cusp and it might be a year or two or something like that, but it's really forming and I think we'll soon just see the joke for what it is and we'll all have a good laugh.
I hope so. I hope so.
Could it be that this is a kind of a way for us as a you know the human race to kind of process what is going on in that sense and what is happening to us and where we are going? That what I'm trying to say here is that everything that is playing out in the world is a form of a psychological analysis, and this is a way for us to kind of process all the stuff that is going on. It's a way to actually come in contact with the things that we fear, and we must do that in order for, you know, if things happen in the future and a thing like the singularity happens or whatever, then everything is going to be instantaneously happening at once, and all of our fears is going to be poured out with all of our joys and happiness at once as well. But we have to process all, even our dark side, so to speak. Do you think that is the case, Jake?
Yes, I believe that whatever we can't deal with personally, you know, in our own, you know, what we can't work through, if you're sitting calmly at home and you feel this tension inside of you and you just don't know what it is, you can't analyze it. It's too personal or it's too close to trauma or something like that. You can't resolve this tension. It will come out in your in the theater of the real world. And this is what's happening collectively with humanity.
Yeah.
We are not coming to terms with our fears, our repressed sexuality, all these subject matters, and it's manifesting as chaos on the world. And it's a healthy process if this is what we need. Personally, I don't believe we need war and famine and death and all that kind of thing.
Sure.
But whatever the collective pool decides is necessary will happen. It will be manifest, and we will work through it by hook or by crook. It's like it's inevitable. So, you know, you can just be present and
Ben, what about that idea that what we're experiencing now, and we can, I guess, tie this in also with the power structure and the idea of the reptilian agenda, that what we're experiencing now is a kind of a processing of this information. We're processing the experience, and even this is a way for us to learn how to deal with it in a you know responsible way, and this kind of is also a reflection of our dark side of our fears. You know, what's your ideas about that?
Yeah, I think certainly. I mean, I mentioned earlier that it has to begin. I mean, if we're looking at solutions, of course, it has to begin, I believe, within the self. And obviously, Michael Tsarin has spoken about this at length, as have others. And it seems to be very common sense, doesn't it? That it has to begin with us. It has to begin with the individual, with self-work in some way. I wholly agree. I understand that we are going through a kind of underworld journey collectively as a race, as a people, as a one people. Yes, of course, I believe in that. You know, I share so many things in common with Jake, for example. I mean, I don't want to see yet more war, yet more suffering, yet more injustice. And yet there are people who do want to see these things. I mean, for example, Jake mentioned earlier, and I'm not dissing the guy, we all understand. But, you know, for example, Jake mentioned the Order of the Skull and Bones and sort of said that this is not powerful magic that these guys are performing. Well, you know, I have a feeling that Mr. Prescott Bush might disagree. I mean, you know, here are people. These are people who worship death. They worship all the things which we, Jake, and Henrik, and the listeners despise. Of course, we don't like suffering. We don't like injustice and agony and pain and hunger. But believe me, Mr. George Bush and his father before him, and Mr. Blair and his friends, they do.
They actually
worship it.
Absolutely. Could it be also, if we try to tie these ideas together here, could it be that we are now in front of a situation here where George Bush and all these evil characters are a reflection of our own, you know, we have, what I'm trying to say here is that could we have created them in that sense? I mean, they're yeah. now in a position, and it's up to us to actually, first of all, deal with it. First of all, we have to recognize it. That's the first thing, and that's what the majority of people doesn't do right now. They don't even face that there is a dark ruling hand, over the planet Earth. But that doesn't mean that they actually are in ultimate control of it. That only expresses the idea that, okay, once we recognize it, we have the power to actually change it and do something about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I certainly agree that I agree that we have created this. We have created, but you see, this is a very interesting point. We haven't really got time to sort of talk about the full consequences of this, but you see, so once you create something magically and astrally, it takes on a life of its own. And we have created this monster, which is called the global elite, and those persons that I mentioned before, and what they represent, and who is controlling them, what is controlling them. Ultimately, I believe that, yes, we have created this. I don't personally...
Really?
I believe that we have created it. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that they created us, although, I'm sort of physically speaking, in terms of the forensics of ancient history, that may be true.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of magically speaking, in terms of what resonates with me meaningfully, I believe that we created them. We created this. We've created what we have, what we're now experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But as I say, happens once you create anything, even like a blog, even like Red Eyes Creations and so forth, it actually starts taking on a life of its own. And certainly in the case of the global elite, it has taken on a life of its own. It's been imbued with diabolical energy from the very lowest, strata of hell, and now all of us have been crucified as a result.
Hmm.
And how are we going to get over that? Ultimately, it is more powerful than us. It's more powerful than me. I can't fight this monster, this machine alone. It would crush me. It would destroy me. But nonetheless, I and you and Jake and everybody listening has something which they do not have, and it's called a soul.
Hmm. You think that's interesting? So you think that the controlling force, or are you talking about the human faction of the controlling elite now, or?
Well, I'm talking about what they represent and who and what is controlling them. I'm mm-hmm. really not talking about individuals. I talk about Prescott Bush and Tony Blair,
sure.
And I'm on record as saying Tony Blair is a practicing Satanist. And a war criminal, if that's libelous. Well, Mr. Blair, you have my email address, let's have it out. I don't care. I've got no money, mate, I'm not really talking about individuals. I'm talking about what controls them, what they represent.
Mm.
I'm talking about something behind them, something invisible, occult.
Mm.
It's black. It's blacker than black, and it's huge. And yes, we have projected it. We have projected it. And equally, yes, I do agree with Jake that it is something which we can kill, or we can transmute, which is more important. But unfortunately, in terms of the messages being transmitted into our sort of forebrains, sort of through the mainstream media and so forth, mind control to the nth degree, I don't think it's going to happen overnight. I don't think I'm going to live sort of to see that day. I think it's much more likely in my life, sadly, and I'm talking about my life only, I'm probably going to be crushed on the wheel.
Do you think, Ben, that this is a force that we have to fight with, physical violence?
Well, I don't know, because if I did say that, I would be in trouble, and I don't wish to be in further trouble, sir. I don't wish to be in. I mean, maybe I'm feeling a little bit tender, a little bit paranoid, to be perfectly frank, Henrik, because I have been in trouble this week, and I don't like being in trouble with the forces of law and order. That is the last thing I like.
Sure.
And yet, nonetheless, I keep speaking out and saying these things and talking about esteemed statesmen like Mr. Anthony Charles Blair as being practicing Satanists. Eventually, when you can keep on doing that, you're going to get in trouble, aren't you? So I don't, you know, uh, you know, I I absolutely do not. Of course, I don't talk about. I don't encourage physical violence. I don't actually believe. Of course, you know, violence is only going to engender more. Ultimately, isn't it? You know, violence is only going to. Of course, it is. Of course, it is. I throw the question back to you, and I ask, you know, how can we transmute this energy into something positive?
Well, exactly. That is the question, and that's what we're here and trying to figure out, I guess. And I think that on one level, it is about that idea that the more you focus on something, or the more energy you give to something, an idea, a concept, or whatever, that is. I think that the human thought and emotional state is a very powerful thing that is being harnessed or used in to a certain degree, and in that case, I have to agree with Jake, if I interpret what he's saying correctly, that the more we kind of focus on that this is a very dark side, and the more we kind of actually, not maybe fear, but we're all of the time giving that idea energy that we are in some way, that they are more powerful than we are, and that they are more, they can't be beaten down easily, and we, it feels like then we're giving away more and more power all the time that idea, and I think that the entire process of what we're dealing with here is that we have to learn that we are the ones in control of this, and no matter what, how much they are trying to scare us, no matter how much they're trying to, you know, they're evoking all the time us for, you know, our energy, so to speak. They want that because that's what are keeping them alive, you know.
Sure.
I don't know. Jake, do you have any thoughts on this here at this point?
Yeah, I would just like to talk about the skull and bones and, you know, the dark forces out there. I see it as, you know, Brahman, the eternal, the one thing that we're all split up in and we're convinced is us. You know, it's all these individual characters that Brahman plays. We can make it simpler. We can say it's a movie, you know. We are playing out this movie, and in the movie there is a plot, there is a story, there are characters, and some of them are for tension, you know, to make it interesting, to make it worth watching, to make it a good movie. There are bad guys who seem always, you know, up in the third act to have the upper hand, and then dramatically the hero comes and he saves the day, right? I mean, that's dramatic tension. That makes the movie worth watching. That makes the game worth playing for Brahman. If you identify the force that animates the movie as a bad force, in other words, you're saying it's an evil director or an evil scriptwriter, then the whole thing will look like a horribly despicable thing. But if you identify with somebody or a force underneath that's creating the entire movie, no matter how dark it seems or matter how many wars or evil things are happening in the movie, if you actually realize that this is a writer who is trying to take you through a fascinating journey where at the end we all learn a wonderful message, then you get more how I interpret these bad forces. Yes, they're supposed to look like they're, that we can't beat them, or that they're huge and that they're in control of everything. That makes the game, that's what takes in Brahman and allows the game to continue. But we are going to wake up soon, and this is why I think things are getting so weird.
I absolutely hope we are going to wake up soon, and I don't necessarily disagree with that. I don't say we're not going to, because that would be self-defeating. But, you know, the only thing I would say about talking about games and game theory and so forth, and talking about directors and movies, is that actually what we are talking about are human beings. Human beings who are being butchered, being burnt alive, who are being bombed, who are dying in agony in places like Afghanistan and places like, you know, Gaza. Why? All for the sake of this dark New World Order. Now, I understand that we, in the West, are more than capable, aren't we, of sort of taking a step back and rationalizing it and being deeply philosophical and sort of and sounding sort of quite spiritually sort of grooved out about it all. But right there on the thick end of it, I think it's an entirely different proposition.
I don't know. I feel like the body or your identity sort of determines how scary you find these things. Like, if you believe that all you are is flesh and blood, then yes, something like a war, something like disease, something like, you know, pain inflicted on your person becomes very scary and very potentially threatening and being put in prison. But if you actually realize that you are the animating force underneath all of that, then there's nothing absolutely that can threaten you, because the only thing that can threaten you is something that's coming from the same animating force. And therefore, war, jail, all that stuff becomes to people like Gandhi, to all these spiritually enlightened people, absolutely nothing, because it does not threaten the true self, which is underneath beyond flesh, which no force, dark, diabolical, Illuminati, anything, war, nothing. Nothing can threaten that thing underneath, the thing that you truly are, and is actually, you are, is creating all these seeming obstacles, but which are probably from a higher perspective, or at least from a perspective further away, you know, less emotionally involved, actually part of this developing of consciousness and bringing it into focus. So I don't think that I don't think that the body, I think that being so afraid of them killing us, of them locking us up, is one of the prisons which allows them to do this. If we realize we are not our bodies, then it becomes not at all a threat. Then they can't lock you up, they can't control you, because there is nothing for them to control. We are which is beyond things.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you know, I am afraid of them doing it. Believe you me, I'm more than afraid of physical pain and imprisonment. And yet, you see, unlike you, without wanting to get personal about it anyway, because obviously I'm not, but, you know, I mean, I'm desperately afraid of those things, and yet I've actually in some ways admitted that it's inevitable, simply because I have my line in the sand, and I'm not willing to cross it for the sake of some hair splitting, some philosophical Eastern hair splitting. Okay, I will say if I think something is wrong, if I think something is blacker than black, and I'm looking down the barrel of a new world order, and I'm saying that, my friend, stinks. I'm not having it.
So are we down to that kind of idea that this is a theological or a religious or even, you know, spiritual question of what is a human? What is it that we are experiencing? What is our purpose here? I mean, what we're talking about here is if we look at it from a religious kind of viewpoint, then that if we look at it from an atheist viewpoint, that's what I'm going to say. That all we is flesh and bone. We're nothing else. Then this experience here becomes very how should I put it? Every life, every single thing is very important, and obviously in a spiritual worldview that is still the case. But what I'm saying is that if you have another religious philosophy behind this, that you have an idea or a concept that you are maybe here for several lives, or that you are living more lives or beyond in heaven or whatever, is this kind of the where we're confronted with now, this simple idea that you know, again, this is the eternal play going on, and for people that might not have this more spiritual side to it, this reality can become a nightmare and almost a hell very soon, as you start to realize what the heck is going on all around you. But if we have another spiritual side of ourselves that we recognize that, okay, we're probably going to live on longer, then this is not, you know, so how should I put it, not so troublesome in that instance. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, well, you know, so thank you. But I believe that we're going to live on. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever, you know. But nonetheless, that does not excuse or in any way abdicate our responsibility.
Sure. Of course.
For this for this present incarnation, for this matrix. So far as we see it, I know it's all an illusion, Jake. I know it's all a dream. I know that ultimately my body and these things don't matter. I know that this force is and will be transmuted into good ultimately, because it cannot be any other way. It is against natural law. It is against everything. It is against, you know, basic human logic. And yet, it ain't going to stop me from doing, that ain't going to stop me from doing everything I can in my power, which is not a great deal, but I'm still going to do everything I can to ensure that it registers the fact that it may have the soul and the being of everybody else, right? It will never have mine.
Ben, I think that that you do have a lot of, power to do something about it, and I don't think that you should, not say that you don't have the power, because again, I think that at least that's my idea here, that what I want to express, and
sure, well, thank you.
That every single one of us can make a huge difference, and Jake mentioned Gandhi before. I mean, there are people that are coming to this planet in one form or another, and they change things radically because of their either what they believe or what they, focus on doing or accomplishing in this world. And I think you're absolutely right to do, follow your path. And I think that this is what it's all about. It's following your own path and finding your path, foremost. That's the most important idea. Jake, do you want to... Do you have something you want to interject here?
Sure, yeah. Who you are, that's sort of the key question. And I mean, it's not something that you can just, in a few sentences, give people a sense of, somebody who's going to have a spiritual moment sitting here listening to this. But it is possible. But I'm just saying that your identity, it's the key. It's the point of everything that's happening around us right now. It's how we perceive ourselves and the world around us and how this thing interacts. It's literally what the whole thing is about. It's what all the conspiracies, all the wars, everything is about, our identity and our perception and physical matter and how identified, how, consumerist and materialist and rationalist we are, how addicted to thought, addicted to goods and all these things, that seems so
agreed.
Overwhelming, and we're so hypnotized by them. This is exactly why there's this conflict, all this anger, all this, negative energy out there. It's because we're misidentified. We believe we are the thoughts, and we believe we are the objects.
Yeah.
So we believe we are the words running through our minds, and we believe we are the objects in our three-dimensional world. And because we believe this lie, we are in such pain because we're misidentified with the reality underneath that, the God, the Brahman, or not, Brahman is actually the facets, but whatever. I'm just trying to say that you're the thing beyond the things, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's this thing that if you try and give it a word, people always hang on to it, and then there's a new thing for people to hang on to, and then they never realize that all God is always trying to point to, or the Tao, is that it's not matter, it's not reality, it's not thought, it's what's beyond. That is what you truly are. It's you are beyond form, you are beyond thought. And we are having to learn that if we can't do it, if we can't accept it because we're afraid of the reality, then it will be torn from us. Our flesh, the planet, will be torn from us, and our true nature will emerge like an egg, like a cosmic egg hatching.
Yes.
But if we just realize that because of the internet and knowledge being spread, then we will have a pleasant, happy transition. But when you see a birth, McKenna would say this, if you see a birth, it looks violent, there's lots of blood, it looks like the end of the world if you didn't know what it was, if you didn't know this is the creation of life. And we are not born, is the thing. We are blind, we have such a small sliver of an idea of the potential. And
so Jake, what you're saying here also is that all the blood and gore that is happening on this planet right now, and all the wars and all of this crap, this is a process that we have to go through.
This is what the awakening of consciousness looks like. It looks bloody and violent, but from another perspective, it is beauty in its purest form. And that sounds macabre, but if you look at it, I was looking at Alex Gray paintings yesterday. Some of them are so gross and macabre, and all these despicable sort of, bodies being torn asunder, but it's the flesh, it's the matter, and we all die. We all go to the toilet and take a shit, There is this dark side and aspect of reality, right? But there is something beyond.
Well, I don't
that,
think there's anything dark point. About taking a shit, my friend.
Well, maybe that points towards my own personality.
Yeah, shit, it's
true. Ian could explain that.
Well, ideas, thoughts about this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I have a feeling, really, that we are actually coming from very, very similar perspectives. You know, I'm sort of, Jake is talking about a sort of a global, a kind of, you know, sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here? A kind of, you know, sort of global breakdown, if you want to use that word, which has to sort of come before the awakening. And I totally understand that. And I sense that Jake is coming from a sort of, as he said himself, a sort of Eastern sort of religious perspective. And I must be honest, I've never quite escaped my Christian indoctrination or conditioning, and I'm not ashamed of that fact.
Well, sure.
And so I'm coming to you as somebody really who has a Christ complex, not in the same way that, you know, Mr. Shaler has a Christ complex. You know, I'm not about to tell you that I am the truth, the way, and the life, because I ain't. But I mean, I tend to think that if it's going to happen anywhere, it's going to happen in my body, in the same way that it happened to Christ, if you want to use that word, or the Son, or it happened to that symbolic or metaphorical being there on the cross. And I must have absorbed that so deeply when I was a kid, and even indeed when I was a teenager and later in life, that in some way I believe that I will physically have to embody that, even if it does indeed mean, and I hope it bloody doesn't, as I keep repeating, but even if it does actually mean imprisonment or torture or some kind of, you know, sort of physical statement of intent. And I, you know, I desperately hope it doesn't, but I am looking down at the future, you see, Henrik, and I'm, you know, I'm looking 10, 15 years in the future, and I'm saying, well, I think there's every chance it will.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's one thing that we have as humans. We can look at a pattern of things and we can see, okay, you know, we can project trajectory or whatever, however you want to call it, that we can see where this is going. What I see also with such an idea or such a capability that we have is that also gives us the capability of changing that. That gives us the ability to actually steer it away from where we see things are going. And I guess what you're also saying here, Ben, is that you have an idea that you're expressing that if things become so bad that you have to, you know, sacrifice your own life in order to try to resist this and change it, you will do that, right?
I am telling you now, on the record, yes, that is correct.
Do you think that, you a little bit connected it with your background, your Christian background, religious background, do you think that this is where it might, like that emanates from?
Yeah, you know, sort of interesting thing. You know, I sort of studied theology at Cambridge University. So I may have told you last time we were talking. So, you know, I am deeply sort of immersed in Christian theology. I'm not necessarily a practicing Christian, but I will tell you this: even spending one night in the cells as I did last week, I very quickly started reconnecting with God. Believe you me.
Well, that's a good thing, right?
It's a great thing.
Well, and there you have it. I mean, that's the beauty of it, because if something as bad as that were happening to you, but in that moment you could find the most positive and wonderful spiritually uplifting thing.
Oh, I found you. I'm sorry. Go on, Henry.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that that spawns the idea that Jake is talking about, that this horrendous dark moment that we're experiencing and living in, that kind of that pushes us towards that edge, towards the, you know, the uplifting side of things, the positive thing, you know.
Yes. It's just, I mean, I tend to always excuse me while I belch. I just sort of, you know, I always sort of tend to regard Eastern philosophy as being unnecessarily, I don't mean atheistic, but actually sort of aphysical. It seems to want to separate the you know, body from the mind. Now, this is great, but actually, if we take the example of those sort of saffron-robed monks who burned themselves alive, Jake, who sat there in meditation, in bliss, no doubt, but they burned themselves alive in the 1960s, actually protesting against the Vietnam War. Now, that, to me, is an example. You know, that, to me, is true conviction.
Right. I mean, the Christ mythos is the same story. He is nailed onto the cross.
Yes.
And because of the material restriction, and this is, I was recently listening to Eckhart, and I can't recommend it more. It's like one of my, he's one of my favorite inspirations at this point. But Eckhart was explaining how Christ being nailed on the cross and that extreme material limitation being imposed on his body is what he needs to be able to transcend.
Mm.
That
absolutely
is, it's a metaphor for being able to overcome the body and the pain and the blood and all that stuff. And that is a beautiful metaphor when it's correctly understood, but it's a, obviously it's a mental prison when it becomes dogma. And also, I mean, religion is another thing, obviously, but it's another, another entire, interview. The original, in my view at least, Gnostic or Egyptian roots of the Christian religion is very much more akin to what the Eastern people are into than what it has become under the more materialist Western mind. So I think from, you know, we're back at...
I think it comes full circle
in the end.
I'm sure you're right, Jake, about that. But again, you seem to be... you're sort of abstracting it. And I just want to know, I don't know why I want to know, I'm pressing you on it for just for my own sake, but I just wonder whether you would be willing to actually make that sacrifice yourself for what you believe in.
Would I personally sacrifice my body on a cross? Are you asking me, would I martyr myself?
That's I'm not on a, you know, obviously not, I would hope, on a cross, but I'm talking about... Right. I'm talking about this new world order and everything that it entails.
Would I be allowing myself to be tortured or prison or something for my conviction?
You know, prison, for example.
Okay, I can only say that I will do in the moment what seems to be the best thing to do in the moment, because I don't know what the context will be when this arises.
Sure.
Saying yes or no to anything is just too simple, and it's like, I don't know. It's a trick. You're trying to trick me into saying something. I have no idea.
I'm not trying to trick you, too.
maybe that's just my perception. I don't know. I feel like I always surrender to the now. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to surrender to the now and to live in accordance with the context of the now. It's like if I'm standing in a row and I'm about to be chipped, you know, and it seems to me like a big joke. And I'll be right in front and I'll say, chip me, because I'm not afraid of these people. And if I decide, if the context feels wrong, I will oppose it with Molotov cocktails. It depends on the context of the now. Yeah. I can't say what I will do, because I don't feel like I am a individual with a cut off brain or it's too complex. Like, I don't know.
It is complex.
You know, like having to, you know, there's all these, you can think up so many horrible scenarios where you will be tested in, you know, will you react in this way or will you react in that way?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
extremely complex.
Hopefully we'll just transcend all these limitations and just go beyond.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I do agree with you. All I would say is that the Jews 60 years ago also would have hoped that they would have transcended, and yet they did have to make that decision. It became very, very real indeed. And it, of course, it wasn't exclusively them. It was other groups as well. But all I'm trying to say by that is that this thing which we're talking about is more than a game. It's real. It happened for the last time in an utterly monstrous way, less or slightly over 60 years ago, but you know what I'm talking about. It happened then. That's 60 years ago in human consciousness. What is that? That's less than a blink of an eyelid, isn't it?
The question then also is, I guess, that, you know, hopefully we have learned from that, you know, and are, I'm not saying that I'm justifying that again as this kind of a sacrifice or whatever, but whatever happened then happened, and we three that sit here at least weren't around at that time, but that, you know, that still gives us the opportunity to learn from it, from the experience, from the history, and say, yeah, you know, no matter where or, you know, what people are being, you know, exterminated in you know, right, for whatever reasons, we can view, we can look upon that now and say, okay, fuck this, we're not going to, you know, do this again, because we've learned from history, and
yes,
and
precisely,
and that you know, that event that happened, that gives us the opportunity to actually make it, you know, from not happening again, and hopefully we're so in contact enough with our history, and we learn and we study, so we can prevent it, you know. That's what I have to say about that, I guess.
Sure. I think we're already doing that. And I don't know, maybe it's because I live in a bubble. I'm surrounded by the blogs that I find entertaining, the music that I find entertaining. So
yeah,
maybe I don't have a completely, you know, wide perspective about what's happening out there. But I almost feel like that doesn't matter anymore. But what I feel is, from my personal interaction with the universe, is that things like Facebook, things like YouTube, is spreading the message of awareness of each other, which is a simple thing. You know, it's a very basic thing. Being aware of this person's tape of a cat falling in a toilet, or singing the newest pop song in their room, or something like that, is having a connection with that person. Even if it seems trivial and crap and crass, people are becoming aware of each other in a massive level. I mean, there's many countries that don't have high-speed internet connections.
Sure.
And but this is all going to change very fast. And we're just going to become aware. It'll be like having a part of your body cut off to see a war, because you can have people blogging about it that you know.
Yeah.
You can have your Facebook friends saying, look at this horrible photo of what just happened in my living room. A bomb fell in it, or something visceral. You can feel it. And this is what's becoming. We're becoming aware of these things. And I think we can actually literally prevent them. And actually, because it's not abstract and far and distant. It's here. It's now. It's in your room.
Sure.
Our tentacles are growing out from your monitor. You can feel the pain. And you won't allow it, because that's hurting yourself.
Well, you know, Jake, I will say, you know, one thing there. You know, I actually do believe that the latest Middle East sort of invasion, which as we all know, has been slated for a long time, and yet has been postponed. I think that is in large part sort of due to the power of the internet, and it is simply that there are hundreds of thousands of people waiting for this thing to kick off in Tehran.
Mm. Yeah.
All on high alert, expecting it. And, you know, now it ain't going to surprise anyone, is it? You know, it's the sort of cat out of the bag syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that the power of the internet and the power of people like us talking about Iran, talking about the PNAT, the Project for the New American Century, and so on, has actually, in this case, actually done quite a lot of good.
It's a very interesting point and a very good point. It actually seems that, you know, because we hear about doom and gloom all the time, and we hear about, you know, nukes is going to hit, you know, the next day or whatever. It's always, we're living on that brink of that, fear all the time, but nothing big like that is so rarely happens. And just in the, I mean, if you think about the allegedly, you know, at least the First World War, I think more people died then. The Second World War, I mean, there are people that have done, you know, kind of a historical, drawn up historical charts on this, and actually said that even though things seem to be really bad right now, things are actually getting better and better all the time, you know. But because
I'm not entirely sure about that, but go on.
Okay, yeah. What I was going to say is, just because we have the amount of coverage that we do of events, and things are actually becoming more global, whether we like it or not, because of things of like the internet, of course, but more and more media, more and more TV, more and more information is coming out. That also opens up for the, you know, possibility for everyone to actually speak out against it and change it. And I actually think you're right there, Ben, that because of so many people have been so outspoken about the Iran and kind of warning ahead of that, we potentially might have prevented a horrible thing from happening. You know,
precisely. You know, I give a lot of respect to Jake for this, and to yourself, and to everybody who has in some small way contributed to this. Now, of course, it's too early to it would be silly to sort of say it's not going to happen.
Sure, sure.
And yet, you know, increasingly, certainly at least in the lifetime of George Bush's tenure as president, it does seem increasingly unlikely now, doesn't it?
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens there. I mean, the focus are also shifting, you know, from different countries, and now for a little while it's North Korea, then it's back to Iran,
yes,
or whatever, you know.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
We'll see what happens, but I think also one of the main points about this idea that you brought up here is that this is a kind of a processing. That's how I see it. We're processing the nightmare of what we're experiencing, and hopefully through that processing we can turn it into something good as soon as we understand it, and as soon as we know what is going on, and also know that we are the ones in charge or in power. We can take control of the situation, we can change it, and we can turn it into something positive. That's at least how I want to see things, and are seeing things. I don't know about you guys. Jake, Ben, any comments?
I like what you said. I think this is it's an issue about perception, and it's you know, George W. Bush and his predecessors had massive amounts of influence. This goes without saying, but it's shrinking. It is shrinking, the amount of people, and every successive generation. But I mean, it's literally happening exponentially right now. But obviously, like, it just seems like it's just obviously going to happen. Kids are not interested in watching the news,
no,
because it's not relevant,
right,
particularly to them.
Yeah.
They'd rather watch a guy do the newest dice trick on YouTube or something,
yeah,
weird, you know? That's,
yeah,
what they're interested in, and that makes sense because it is relevant to you. It's not relevant to me what is happening or across the world, you know, some violent act, singular violent act, a war, obviously, is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
But all the stuff that's on the news is not relevant to me. But they want to make it that way because it's fear and control, and it manipulates you.
Mm.
But that stuff is slipping every day. But the more people blogging, the more people going onto the internet for their entertainment, this control is slipping from their hands. And that's why we're reaching this Armageddon scenario, because it's the choice we're going to make right now. And we're all going to decide it collectively. Are we going to blow it all up? You know, are we going to go out in a burst of energy? Is that how our awakening is going to happen, by tearing the material from us? Or is it going to happen, you know, smoothly? Is there going to be a transition where we sort of, you know, take these psychopaths? They're psychopathic. They're crazy, you know.
Mm.
I mean, to be honest, I mean, a vast majority of the people around you are pretty crazy and identified with you know, material and their mind. They're just absolutely insane, and that's why culture is so scary and creepy. But you can inform yourself and make a network that feels sane to you now.
Mm.
I didn't have that before the internet. I only had my own
greed,
you know, personal views, and now that I can share, and I've realized obviously I'm not alone, and I have people who are interested. It's just wonderful.
Mm.
And I feel there's so much potential. And yes, I it's part of my personality and ego to be overly optimistic and to sell that, because it is a bit of a product that I'm selling. I'm selling you the idea that you don't need to be afraid. Do I have personal fear inside of me? Of course I do. Would I be scared if somebody kicked down my door now and said, "Stop spreading the truth about 9/11, you pyramid mega ritual motherfucker, you"? It's ridiculous. I don't believe that that'll happen. But if that happened, would I be afraid, and would I be shitting in my pants? Of course I would. But I don't know. It just seems to me like there's this real wonderful opportunity, and I hope that people can keep into perspective, you know, where it's coming from. I hope it's, you know, coming from somewhere pure and honest. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think this is kind of the core of what so many people actually are struggling with within themselves, you know, right now. That in kind of the internal dialogue that people are having actually is so, you know, I think it's excellent that we did this program with you guys, and we could kind of just, you know, toss around some of these ideas and kind of process it all, because I think that this is where the core issue right now actually lies, where, you know, are we going to be, you know, taken down by all this, or are we going to be lifted up by it? I think that this is kind of you know, the end. That's the end game, so to speak. That's the final,
totally right,
you know, threshold that we're standing in front of right now. And I mean, I can't thank you guys enough for coming on. We've done a 2-hour special here, and I think that this has been one of the most important programs that we've ever done, just because of the nature of what I just talked about. But I want to leave again the floor open. If there's someone of you that want to kind of interject something or say something in the last few minutes, if there's not, I want to also give you the opportunity to mention you guys' blog again, so people know where they can find more of your material, writings, and videos, and so forth. So, anyone, Ben, start off.
Yeah, sure. You know, I would just echo everything you said. I think it's been a great 2 hours. I hope if people have stayed with us that they've also enjoyed it, and I hope they'll subscribe and they'll listen to more shows, because it's important that this information gets out. And it's just, you know, as I've said many times, I'm on the record of saying I think Red Eyes is a superb resource. And if I can just say to Jake, you know, thank you, mate, for kind of, you know, sort of being a part of the battle which we've been joined in today.
I'm wonderfully stimulating. I loved every minute of it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, totally. And I think more importantly, I think both of us are coming from from an extremely similar place. And I would just encourage people to explore themselves and to, keep going with this research and to keep on speaking out, to keep on blogging, and just to make sure that this damn thing ultimately fails.
Ben, mention your blog.
I will. It's Ben, what is it? Ben-fairhall.blogspot.com. Please, go on there, have a look, have a good read, have a good look around. There's a lot of stuff in the archives, you know, not just in the headlines and so forth. Enjoy that. Send me some messages. If you're female and sexy, then definitely send me a message. Just enjoy it. Hopefully I'll hear from you soon. Thank you.
Wonderful. Jake, same goes for you. Last few minutes, closing thoughts, or just mention your blogs and stuff.
Yeah, what a wonderful opportunity to really get in there and, you know, try and, you know, make lucid make vivid your really sort of, these issues that we've discussed seem to me like the real sort of personal, belief systems, you know, the things that really animate, you know, and sort of, you know, I mean, our work, I mean, we didn't really discuss particular synchronicities or media events. We were really discussing our belief systems, you know,
sure.
And it's very similar and very different than these. This is, you know, what people are experiencing in their own personal lives. I don't know. It's really interesting and fascinating to do. And I hope it was interesting for people. And they can see my work at thebravenewworldorder.blogspot.com. I have a new blog, The Blob, where I just put up more random disjointed thoughts and articles, and I'm, you know, trying to get back into writing a little bit here and there instead of just making videos, which is very interesting and another facet. And it's very wonderful, and I don't know, I just feel like I should mention that I'm very eager to see what happens in the crop circle season again next year, because I don't know, there was so many interesting designs this year, and there's also this, you know, it looks like there's a pattern of the crop circles are slowing down, the amount of circles that are happening every year. So I want to see, is that trend continuing? Will it taper off to zero? Or is it happening like there's this big overarching pattern?
Sorry. Ben, go ahead.
Will we see more 3D glyphs?
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say something just very briefly, because we were talking about crop circles 2 hours ago. I just wanted to say, Jake, one of the most interesting things was, now, Henrik, this is very interesting, but it is the case. It is true that crop circle experience seemed to actually influence with Jake whilst he was over here. Is that not the case, Jake, that there were actual glyphs that seemed to actually reflect your research interests at the time that happened whilst he was over here living in Britain, or he was here in Britain for a few weeks? And so those glyphs appeared then, didn't they, mate, in the fields?
Yeah, there's no doubt. When one starts being involved, you know, with consciousness and following synchronicity, it becomes part of your life, and it's reflected in your environment, but massively and vividly so when you go down to the fields and you're researching cubes and hexagons, and you stand inside cubes and hexagons in the field, and they're rare in crop circle. I mean, there are cubes and hexagons, but one happening the day you're there, like, you're in the fields, wonderful.
Yeah, that's great.
Wonderful.
It was fantastic. It was beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you,
that.
Ben. I can't thank you enough for helping me with that experience. It was wonderful.
Mate, you haven't got to thank me. As I say, you know, sort of next year, if you want to come down and do it again, you're more than welcome. Unfortunately, I can't drive, but I'm sure we can work around that in some way.
We'll totally see what happens. I'm very eager to see if we'll have more 3D glyphs next year. You know, like interiors, will it expand? Will the crop circles? You know, obviously every year there are surprises, but
I'm so curious
to see. Have we now gone into the canvas and it's now 3D rooms are now a possibility?
Precisely.
Does that mean objects in space in crop circles? Because we have seen three-dimensional objects, but not like, you know, in a perspective, you know, in part of an image, like, you know, a photograph in the fields. That's what I'm sort of talking about. Not just dot matrix lines making a gray face, an actual, you know, painting in the field.
That was an incredible freaking work of field art, that face that you're referring to. But, you know, so what you're, you know, sort of saying there about going into the image, that reminds me of the, again, this is too big to go into right now because we're wrapping up, but the 2001 monolith. You know, it's almost as though now we collectively are going into that fucker.
That's right. you know, the Stargate
absolutely
is opening or something like that.
Absolutely. Well, let's do it. Let's do it, guys.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. I want to, you know, give out the blog addresses again so people can check out both of these gentlemen's, very talented gentlemen's work. First, we have ben-fairhol.blogspot.com. And then we have the Brave New World Order.blogspot.com. That will give you the main blogs, and from there you'll find links to a lot of the other material that they have out there. So, you know, again, to both you guys, thank you so much for coming on for, as I said before, one of the actually most important interviews I think we've ever done here. So, to you both, thank you so much.
Thank you, Henry.
For each of all, for every man a religion. Find everybody and rule everything and all more. Forget everything and remember. For everything a reason. Forgive everybody and remember. For each of all. Everybody and rude. Everything and all more. Forget everything and remember. For everything a reason. You got to see it.